Meeting is now being recorded.
Yep. Okay, so it's Mike Sessa with the Privacy Group, and we just started. I'll add a roll call in later, but Doug was giving us the introduction to the meeting along with Julia, our co-chair. So take it away, Doug.
Thank you, Michael. So this work group really started, got kicked off back in the San Francisco meeting of the Fall PASC Summit, where I led a panel presentation of folks talking about implementation of GDPR. We didn't really get into any specifics about interpretations or what it is, because we believe that's been covered ad nauseum in lots of other discussions. But, you know, coming from the National Student Clearinghouse, I would say I was selfishly trying to get some definition around what do organizations like the National Student Clearinghouse need to receive from institutions as far as indicators around GDPR subjects. I see this very much like the directory block indicator under FERPA that got launched several years ago, where every time we receive a record from an institution, there's an indicator on that record as to whether that student has elected to block their directory information or not. We store that information in our database along with that student record so that as we are providing services as the National Student Clearinghouse, we can honor that flag, as the student indicates, where necessary. Obviously, if we're doing compliance reporting with the Department of Education and NSLDS, we can do that without regard to the FERPA flag, but if we're doing other services, we need to honor that. So likewise, as we start implementing, or as institutions start implementing compliance for GDPR, the one of the key concepts that I was talking to the panel about at the PESC meeting was, do we need a flag? Do we need a set of flags? What information do we need to capture for GDPR subjects? Because, you know, as organizations and vendors and in the world of GDPR, we are a processor, not a controller. The institution is the controller. But the institution will pass us data so that we can provide services for the institution. And if there are instances where whatever service we might be providing, that service needs to be aware of the GDPR status of those students, obviously we need to be aware. We need to know, just like we get the FERPA flag, we need to get some indicator regarding GDPR so that we can then treat that record how the registrar or admissions officer wants us to treat it. And one of the outcomes of the panel session was that there wasn't yet universal kind of agreement on what that reporting and what that attribute might look like. And the clearinghouse was about ready to reach out to vendors and start proposing, you know, how we might capture that. But we actually took a step back and say, we really need to have a conversation with school officials on trying to understand what are their requirements for flagging the data. And, you know, so the first phase, Michael started this off, either Michael or Julia, as a two-phased approach. The first is really a conversation around, let's talk about how institutions need to flag data. And then once we've identified that, we can then kind of move over into the implementation of it, which might involve student information service providers adding flags to their student record database, and then of course organizations like the clearinghouse would then need to add appropriate flags to file layouts that we receive data from. And so ultimately at the end of this, my hope is that PESC can create this mini standard, if you will, which is the attributes and the definition of those attributes around the GDPR, so that service providers can exchange that data and treat the records as such. So I will pause there and ask if there are any questions about that, and if this is what you thought you signed up for. Any feedback?
Yes. Doug, this is Mark at IU. One of the things I would add is that an additional part of that discussion was that we didn't believe that the GDPR would be the last privacy regulation passed in either countries or potentially states. California was brought up as one who is pushing a privacy regulation that will be similar to the GDPR. And thus, as we craft a standard or a means by which we transfer the privacy state of the individual to service providers like the National Student Clearinghouse, perhaps we need to consider it more broadly so that it's extensible to other situations.
That's a great point, Mark. I'm glad you brought that up. In fact, that was one of the reasons why we dropped GDPR from the name of this work group. We wanted it to be the Data Privacy and Protection. So thank you. That's a really good point. And so if it's possible to create an overarching standard for how to treat all potential privacy flags going forward, that would be fantastic. Any other feedback? Okay, so I'm not a GDPR expert. I'll go on record as saying that. It sounds like Julia is, so I will defer to her. But, you know, one of as we move through the series of conversations over the next few months, we're clearly going to drill down into kind
joining
of like
the meeting
requirements for
Greg Carlin
keeping records. Welcome to the call, Greg.
Yes, Craig. I'm sorry.
I'm here. Sorry.
Had to join a little late.
Greg, who are you with again?
I'm sorry.
Craig?
I didn't hear that. Yes.
Could you repeat where you're from again? Thank you.
Oh, Fort Hays State University in Hays, Kansas.
Great. Thank you.
I serve on the Speedy committee.
Awesome. I want to make sure I have your address, Craig.
Okay.
So I guess we should probably state our desired outcome of this working group. So, and maybe a time frame. So for me, you know, I obviously with the National Student Clearinghouse, representing the clearinghouse, and of course representing PESC as well. You know, GDPR has been in effect since May, I believe. And right now, you know, to be honest with you, our position is going to be, well, we haven't been instructed by anyone to do anything differently yet. But we don't want to take a passive approach. We want to take an active approach. So coming out of this for me would be, or success out of this group for me would be, clearly identifying the attributes or data elements, if you will, I really see it as school officials, registrars and admissions officers, stating the requirements for how they need to flag the data for potential uses or restrictions down the road. So if we could get that sort of defined, then that's awesome. And then, of course, we need to move into the implementation part of that, which would be student information systems and vendors configuring their systems to pass those flags around. I believe that there is, I've heard, I don't know that this is confirmed or not, I believe there was a goal of perhaps giving the community an update at the upcoming ACRO conference in April, but I don't know that, I just heard that, and so if we could have some real progress done by then, it would be fantastic.
Join in the meeting.
We can't let this go on forever. Because
which meeting in April?
I'm sorry?
Holly. I'm sorry, at which meeting is there going to be another?
Annual meeting is what
right.
Doug was referring to, which is in LA in April.
Oh, I got it. ACRO. Thank you.
Yep.
Hi, who just joined us, please?
This is Rick. I got dropped off.
Okay. Welcome back. Rick, did you have any comments? I know you were active on the panel, and I wanted to make sure, you know, as one of the major SISs, you had a chance to weigh in, although I know, you know, you and Doug, we've socialized this a number of times.
Yeah, I have nothing specific I need to say right now.
Okay.
Okay, so... So I just wanted to do a check to make sure that that this group was kind of in alignment with what we're tasked to do and to make sure there aren't any misalignment with what I'm expecting out of this work group and what you all are. So last opportunity for input or feedback. Okay.
And I'll just add, this is Julia again, that from ACRA's perspective and my perspective, I think this is about really developing something for institutions that gives some clarity to them and hopefully puts them in alignment with what needs to be flagged and how, so that it becomes a system that becomes fluid regardless of the regulation that we're trying to deal with. I think ideally that's where we'd like to get to, and so that our members have that sort of guidance.
Right. So let me ask a question about given where we're tasked to do here, do we need to include any other audiences in this meeting, or do we believe that we have everyone that we need? I certainly think that we need to involve institutions in the upfront part of this conversation, because it's really all about defining some attributes and elements to the data, and then later on it will become more vendor specific and vendor heavy as we talk about how to actually implement it. Does that make sense? So, Julia, has ACRO done any outreach to institutions regarding GDPR? I know that you've produced papers and you've produced information, but as far as polling them to get information about how their, you know, what their readiness is, et cetera?
We did do that some time ago, Doug. Now, I'm trying to think of the timeline and when we did that, but it's been long enough ago. It was before implementation. So it was really sort of seeing where people were and being ready. And so I'm not sure and at that time.
Okay.
Certainly the readiness wasn't where it is today, and not that I think institutions are all ready, but I think it is a bit dated in time when we
right.
did it. I do have a question about people who are on this call. Obviously, this is also going to have some impact on institutions that aren't higher education institutions, but all institutions. So I don't know if we have any kind of a stakeholder from the pre-K to secondary through secondary level, but that might be something to think about.
Julia, that's an excellent point. And as I mentioned a little earlier, I've been in communications with Access for Learning, which works in the PK-12 area. And Larry is supposed to be joining the call. He said maybe at 1:30 today.
Great.
To have that umbrella approach.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that he's, you know, that doesn't mean we can't have more. You know, the more the merrier.
And Julia, Anthony here from Australia should point out as well that our role here in the AU is largely the K-12 space, and we're also members of A4L.
Fantastic. Okay.
This might be a really stupid question. So when we're talking about attributes and flagging elements and all the rest, is the use case we're looking at just in regards to the national clearinghouse and data that gets moved there? Because when we've been looking at GDPR and impacts here, there's a lot of the right to be informed, the right to access, the right to rectification and erasure and data portability. And it's sort of, there seems to be a lot more to do in terms of meeting some of the obligations under GDPR than just flagging, particular students that may be EU citizens. Is that what we're thinking? I'm just trying to get a sense of
yeah.
the scope as to.
So, this is Doug. This is definitely not a National Student Clearinghouse thing. This is really any organization that's going to be exchanging data, for perhaps, or they might be providing services on behalf of an institution, where they need to take these flags into consideration as they provide that service. So we're looking for, you know, and PESC is a a national and an international standard setting organization. So whatever we come up with here will be certainly used here in the U.S., but they're certainly not restricted to the U.S.
Great.
But yeah, you're absolutely right that we need to, like for example, with GDPR, there actually even has been some debate about who is subject to GDPR rules. And but one of the things that we know is that there, when information is collected on an individual, and that individual is falls under the rules of GDPR, which, for example, could be you are physically present in a European Union country at the time that the data was collected on you, then that's an important piece of information to know. And the, for example, the admissions office in a higher education institution may need to flag that so that they know that they may have some special rules to abide by as it relates to that individual's information that they've collected. And so that's really the starting point, I would say, is that what we're trying to accomplish here is, let's figure out how to go about tagging that. And it could just be, we just start with a simple, are you a GDPR subject, ? Now, that's being very specific to GDPR. When we get into actual field design, we may simply have a field that says, are you subject to a data privacy law? And if the answer is yes, then another attribute would say, which one? And G would be for GDPR. I'm just making this up on the fly, but that's the type of thinking that we need this group to work on.
And I completely agree, Doug, and following up on that, the question becomes, do we want to define a structure that is not only extensible beyond for the privacy state of the student at the time, but how deep do we want to go? And I kind of got the impression that, in essence, we can work on a number of different levels. One is we want to enable the institution to basically determine the privacy state of the individual. And secondarily, we want to work on the same level that they want to work. They may wish to say, look, all you need to know about this particular student is that they are a GDPR data subject. Institution 2 may wish to say they're a GDPR data subject, and we want you to do everything except they've invoked the right to not be processed in this function.
Right.
And the question is, how did we create a structure that would do both? And correct me if I'm misunderstanding.
No, I think you're spot on. I like the way you said that. Enable the institution to determine the data privacy status. Is that how you said that?
State. It's the state of their privacy. So,
okay.
I have a FERPA compliant state. I can have a GDPR compliant state. I can have a California privacy state.
Correct.
But the institution is going to interpret the state of that individual, how we interpret the regulations for that individual. And thus, as you, as our processor, need to know how we've interpreted the state of that individual for that purpose.
Exactly.
Also, this is Siva from Bordet. I was just thinking, is there any possibility of expanding the current FERPA flag itself to encompass other forms of, privacy, the state of privacy or privacy in general?
Siva, this is Julia, and one of the things I guess I'm thinking about as we talk about these things is we need to constantly remind ourselves that we want to think broadly about this, not just GDPR, not just FERPA. And I think you're exactly right. So if you can build a system that can look at certain elements of these regulations that would be would go sort of laterally across the regulation, so that then if somebody says they're in the FERPA state of privacy as well as the GDPR as well as Korea, then you could say, well, these elements all are the same, and so this is the data. These are the attributes that we want to watch for. I don't know if that makes any sense, but if we could somehow begin to see where these cross the lines, where they become the same, that might help us into trying to build something that's a little bit more, maybe not universal, but can have applications across more than one regulation. Does that make
sense? Yeah, I wasn't actually thinking about identifying which data fields come under each privacy rule.
My concern with that, this is Rita, would just be that if you're interpreting the different regulations and saying where they're the same and where they're different and you're providing that analysis for the schools, then there's a risk of getting it wrong, and there's also, I know we want to think broadly, but just using the GDPR as an example, there are situations under the GDPR that aren't black and white, and schools might have different ways of complying with it, and I think we want to allow them that flexibility. So even though it creates more of a burden on the school and on the vendors to know what these regulations are, I think it's a more flexible solution to just have it say what regulations are applying and then leave it up to the institutions and their vendors to determine what that means in the specific individual circumstances for the use of the student data.
I completely agree with that. I think if we're not careful about focusing on how we exchange the information that someone has determined that the person is subject to GDPR or any other privacy rule, then we get in the area of interpretation, and that should not be our role. That's
right.
The institution's role. So I don't want every institution could determine something different in terms of what data elements are involved.
Yeah.
So I don't want to get into the business. I want to get into the business of exchanging the information that an institution has said this student is subject to FERPA or GDPR or whatever privacy rule or requirement they're determining. And leave it and let the schools interpret from there.
Yes.
And, you know, I do think, you know, comparing FERPA and GDPR, I mean, I do think, and you're going to try and say, I have determined that student X is a full FERPA restriction as opposed to data or student Y who has an address restriction. Now, you know, honestly, I don't even know if we contain that information or if we've created a standard for submitting that information to the clearinghouse or not. I actually don't know. But my point would be, the parallel to that is, okay, does the student have is he subject to any privacy regulation? The answer is yes. Okay, if so, in what we need to display is, okay, which privacy regulations are they subject to? Okay, so one could be GDPR, another one could be FERPA. If it's FERPA, we need to define a structure that says, what are the states of FERPA that we're concerned with? What are the states of GDPR that we're concerned with? what are the states of the California regulation that we're concerned with? And it, and to some extent, that needs to be a data standard that, in essence, we can create on the fly as new regulations come into being, without a limit on the number of attributes that can be fit under those states, if I'm making sense. I'm using state a lot. I live in a state, too, by the way.
And I'm in a state of confusion. No, just kidding. No, I think you're right, Mark. You know, FERPA is a little funny because institutions define what constitutes directory information. That's about the only flexibility that that we have built into our process. But you're right in that when we get to, like, if California comes out and theirs, and they have a very simple rule that says don't share any piece of data on my record if my flag says yes, that's easy to implement. And but we don't know what that looks like yet. You know, and then with GDPR, again, I'm not quite sure how we're going to define, you know, one is simply recording the fact that they are a GDPR subject, which means whatever criteria the institution set, we're just flagging it for future purposes. There are no restrictions, for example, that we're aware of where we can't use data that is a GDPR subject, but in the future that might change, and we have to store that information so that we can honor the request of the registrar or the admissions office later down the road. Go ahead.
Well, no, I'm just doing a what if in my head, but you know, I have sort of two modes that I'm thinking about. One is, you know, you basically serve as a processor that fall within the legal basis of our relationship with the student under the GDPR. So if you're verifying enrollment, if you're verifying degrees, those things just constitute a service that's a natural extension of what our institution would otherwise do. Now, mm-hmm. when it comes to you're also a data aggregator and you provide a reporting service for those who are in there, it is conceivable that a student could say, yeah, I want all the regular services. But by the way, when you do this reporting, I don't want to be a part of that.
Exactly.
So that would be a refusal of a process, or the right to not be – I forget the right phrasing. And thus, going back to what Rick was saying, we need to be able to say this is the student is subject to the GDPR, and here is the state in which we need to consider them. So when I say the state, I mean in this case, basically you only need to know that they're subject to the GDPR and the process that we can't do is X. And am I making – I mean that's how I thought about that relationship. And I back to the – and I forget your name from Australia, but – you know, the one thing nice about using the National Student Clearinghouse as an example of a process or service is that it really does scale. So many of us do, at least in the U.S., use the National Student Clearinghouse, that it really does provide enough scale to make the standard sort of almost ubiquitous here. Doesn't mean it's limited to that. It's just that it's easy to talk about that way.
Yeah, and when
when
an institution contracts with the National Student Clearinghouse to provide one of its many services, it is in that service contract, if you will, where the institution would clarify with the clearinghouse around the use of data that has been flagged for privacy purposes. So, you know, we could already have the flag stored in our system, but when we provide a service, we would know, and we would have to, we would have to build into our application the ability to exclude certain records that are flagged.
Yeah,
one of the
I
things
agree.
That we've been working on here is, I'll just run you past two things that we've been working on here in the AU with some of the A4L folk. The concept of what we call a privacy obligation document, a POD, and that defines the relationship between two parties that are exchanging data. And most of the time it's between a data processor, so a third-party vendor, and a data, what's the other term that GDPR use? If you're the controller. The school. And in that POD, we define effectively a digital contract. This is the POD, you know, about date from and to, this is the version. These are the laws that are covered in that exchange, you know, that protect that exchange. Here are the particular clauses you need to be aware of. This is the fields and elements that will be exchanged as part of the agreement. That's between two sort of entities, bodies. What we're now looking at is what we're calling the personal POD, or the PPOP, and that will be the way we think that is a means of student being able to define, okay, I don't want my data to go to this particular vendor or that particular vendor. So it's a personal set of obligations that are injected and form part of sort of that broader POD, but they're very, very student specific. So perhaps it might be worth me shooting the documentation that was, and once again, the POD is fairly mature. The personal POD sounds possibly like where you guys are wanting to head might be a bit more appropriate here, but happy to send that around, and at least you can see where we're thinking at the moment around this the privacy space.
That would be great, I think.
Yeah, hear, hear.
Awesome. All right, I'll shoot that to you after the session.
Wonderful. I just emailed everybody that's on the call, so you have each other's emails. Julia, if I may, Julia, if I may jump in and serve Laura's role for a second and do a quick time check to see, you know, with 20 minutes left, what, you know, what's the best use of those 20 minutes going forward.
Thanks, Michael, for doing my job.
I am the taskmaster behind the scenes.
Let's think about how we need to break things down to get us to our next meeting and what we would need to cover in the next meeting. Doug, going back to your phases, one of the things we talked about was what colleges and universities need to send service providers. What are those attributes? So how might we deal with that? How might we think about that? Mark, I'm going to lean on you a little bit here to think about what some of those indicators would be in the broadest sense.
Well, the first, I think we need to define, or it just have something which is are they subject to a privacy, I don't know what you call it, law or, and, you know, it would.
Yeah, regulation.
The regulation.
So,
it actually starts back even before sending it to a provider. It is, what does an institution need in order to properly flag and store information about its students and the regulations that they might be subject to. And I think, you know, we're going to have to get some data people together to try to, I mean, forgetting about that for a second. So the first thing you could just do is say yes or no. And the answer, and then if the answer is yes, which privacy regulations are they subject to? And again, that might be a whole set of fields, or it might be
leaving the meeting.
That for
Nathan
the
Ciccolo.
Data people to figure out. Well, Mark, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but the first thing you need to know is you would need to have the ability to mark on a student's record which privacy regulations they are subject to, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Which one?
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Are they subject
I mean,
and then which one?
Right.
Right.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And then, well, no, let's just start there. I think that's exactly right.
Yep.
And then we need to structure a field that says, we need to structure a record, or we need to communicate, a better way to say it, we need to communicate the nature of the data subject's relationship to the privacy regulation. So, and what I mean by that is we go back to the example that we could use FERPA. Here's someone who has a FERPA restriction. Therefore, you can't use the data in various ways. Here's someone who has a GDPR restriction. You can't use the data in various ways. And so we need to be able to indicate, and the distinction between the two, and I hate to be so stark, and it's probably not this stark, but in FERPA, it's almost an on-off switch.
Right.
In the GDPR, it may be more nuanced.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think one of the things we need to think about with GDPR is that, as I shared with Doug and Michael, you know, you're not born a GDPR data subject, live your whole life a GDPR data subject, and die a data GDPR data subject. That can change based on what you're doing, where you are, and so
which
it's somewhat
fluid. Which institution you attend.
Right. So it's somewhat fluid. So we need to think about even at this time,
correct,
are you subject to a data regulation and which ones?
Hey, it's Holly. Can I ask a question? As
sure.
We're thinking about GDPR, I know we want to paint with broader brushstrokes than GDPR, but one of the things that we had to do is deal with, and it's a little bit of a tangent, so if you want to table it for the next meeting, that's fine. It's just something that's been swirling around in my mind as we've been talking this whole call. We have the Tier 1, which we're discussing, you know, how to process the data when it comes to us the first time around. But GDPR has that right to be forgotten. And so I just think we have to also think about that, because a student can not be flagged today, but then change their mind and have to have the right, they have to have the ability to be forgotten. So I just wanted to throw that in there, because I don't know how you guys are thinking you will deal with that.
So my initial thoughts on that are that so GDPR covers all kinds of things, not just education, of course, but applying for college is a pretty decent business case for collecting information about the person. So there's most likely not going to be a lot of this, please forget me and erase all of my education records going on. I could be completely wrong about that, but that's just my initial assessment. And therefore, you know, we would have to put something in place as a processor to allow an institution, and it could be just a, you know, call up or send me a letter that says, please remove this, all of these students' records. We're not going to put in, I don't think we're going to put something automated in place that will automatically go through and do that.
Okay. So I think that maybe my issue with it is related to my stage of the process, because Holly here with GoToCollegeFairs.com, and we're collecting right at the beginning of the process. And believe it or not, we get two or three of those per week.
Okay.
We delete my data. And some of it is ignorance, because they don't understand. We only share with colleges, so we don't have a broad group of recipient type group of types of recipients. We only share student data with colleges, but we do get several of those requests.
Okay.
And so I just thought it was, I thought it was worthwhile. And I think you're right. Once a student actually applies to attend, then they wouldn't want to be forgotten. But they, I live a little bit more ahead of that process. And I don't know,
sure,
maybe that's a function of my, my seat at, in the trajectory. But I just thought it was worth mentioning because the truth of the matter is they do, they have to have a right to be forgotten at any stage of the process. And you're right, it's less and less likely the further down the road they go, but it's still something that we have to have in place.
Right.
They have to have the right to request to be forgotten. There's not an absolute right that they will be forgotten and that all of their data will be removed, but they have to have the right to request for that. So in your situation, it is dramatically different than an institution where they're actually attending. They've been admitted, they're attending. I can promise you there'd be lots of students who'd request, I used to get it all the time when I was a registrar. I want all my D's and F's removed because they didn't count towards my degree. Well, no. The answer is just no. Even under GDPR, the answer is still no.
Legal basis.
Mm-hmm, right.
And
right.
Lots of legal bases for maintaining that data. Now, that interpretation is still within institution. The one thing I would say is that may happen over time that I'm sort of anticipating is that the student, the former student, doesn't expect their academic record to be removed, but they do want their contact information removed.
Yeah.
One will be an interesting case. None of us will know until it goes to court. But
mm-hmm.
That one, I think, might be something institutions are more likely willing and able to do than remove the academic record. And so from a standpoint of PEST, what we need to be able to do is not tell the institution how to do it or provide systems, but carry the information from one agency or one organization to another so that the decisions can be made at the appropriate places.
Correct. I completely agree with you there, Rick. We just need to give schools the ability to record whatever interpretation they've made. And that's it.
Right. So we have 10 minutes left, and I'm thinking about for our next call and when that might be and what we want to accomplish. And we talked about the two questions we've already talked about. Are they subject to data regulations and then which ones? And I'm also looking at what you all came up with at the Fall 2018 Data Summit. And there are three questions. The first three questions that are posed there, I think, are things that we can be working on. The first one is, what rules are colleges and universities applying to student records to determine if a record is subject to GDPR? The second being, are the standards for the set of data elements required to correctly store GDPR indicators on the student record? And then third, have SIS vendors updated their systems to include these? And if so, how did they determine the necessary field? So I think those three things need our investigation. What do you
Absolutely.
Think about pursuing those during the time between now and our next meeting?
I think those are the key questions. In fact, the first one I almost – think shouldn't be one of the questions because I guess it's okay that different institutions interpret it differently because
mm-hmm.
every legal department is going to have their own opinions. So maybe we don't need to worry so much about making sure every school is doing it exactly the same way. All we need to make sure is that they have the appropriate ability in their systems to indicate or to flag the state of the individual's privacy. Make sense?
I, I would make one caveat as a person from one of the SIS vendors. I don't think
Hey, Rick, is this Rick?
Yeah,
I know it is, and I'm sorry, this is Julia again. I'm sorry to interrupt. But before you all speak, just as I get used to your voices, could you say this is so-and-so?
Oh, sure.
So we get used to hearing each other's voices.
Thanks. No problem. Thanks. I don't think it's the purview of this group to ensure that the institution has a place to flag it. I think what this group needs to do is to ensure that if the institution flags or notes that a student is subject to something, that we can exchange that data, that we can exchange among agencies and organizations that an institution has determined that a student or a person, because this is not just students, this is also staff,
right,
is subject to a particular privacy regulation. Now, it would be incumbent upon me as a vendor, as an SIS vendor, to ensure that the institution has a place to do that. But I don't know that it's a purview of this group to do that. I think what we have to determine is how do we exchange that?
I agree, Rick. You nailed it.
Yep.
Yeah, that... I mean, that makes sense. Whoa. I'm sorry, who was that?
No, that was Rick. Someone said,
okay,
nailed it, and I said, I have my moment.
Okay.
So then, Rick, this is Michael. To synthesize a little bit back to you to make sure I understand, it's not to be involved with the determination of if and how, but once it's made, what do you do from that point?
And how do we
transfer
the information?
I think, Michael, maybe it's not if and what.
Right, there you go.
Because
okay.
I think it's not necessarily that. I think how might be relevant in that how did they make that determination, but then how
right.
is that exchanged?
Yeah, it's almost a, here it is, not how did it get here and what is it. It's no, here it is. Now figure out how to exchange it.
Right.
And this is Jeff Elliott. I think we also have to, as has been discussed earlier, be aware of the nuances that a university has or whoever's trading has taken on that privacy regulation as well. Because I know I have four universities I support and there's slightly different nuances of FERPA between the four, much less what GDPR is going to be. So we have to have some way of conveying in that exchange those, I don't know if you want to call them attributes, but you know those nuances. And so within that exchange, exchange recommendation, that we develop, we have to be able to capture all of that background information, not just the regulation, but what does it mean?
Yeah, I think when Mark, this is Doug, I think when Mark was talking a little earlier, he said, number one is having the ability to indicate which privacy regulation the student's data is subject to, but then secondly, the ability to communicate the relationship of the individual to the privacy legislation. I think that's what, I think you're saying the similar things there.
Yeah, I think so, Doug. I think so.
And again, some privacy regulations may be very cut and dry. Other ones may have different variations.
Well, I think with GDPR, it's really going to get fun because if we've collected basic information while they were in an EU member country, but then when they come on campus, we collect additional information. Now what happens?
Yeah.
Is it all subject or only what we collected while they were in an EU?
But yeah,
that's not the topic here.
all of those little nuances, you know, we need to make sure we don't inhibit a school's ability to
right.
take advantage of those nuances. But as
right.
getting back to Rick Skeel's point is that when we get around to exchanging it, that's when we have to be
right.
pretty crisp about defining it.
I agree.
Okay. So one thing that I think needs to be done is for maybe someone who understands GDPR to try to figure out are there different levels, variations, or whatever when it comes to, you know, okay, I've determined that this person's data is subject to GDPR, and so what? So what are there other components to that? Are there does it relate to a specific set of data fields, or is it the entire thing? I think that knowing that would be helpful. Again, getting very tactical and looking at GDPR, which is one of our first policy regulations we're going to look at.
Well, I agree, Doug. Maybe the thing to do is to start with GDPR and then generalize up.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Mm-hmm.
So that we can talk about specifics, so that we can argue those specifics, and then we can say, okay, now if California comes in, how will that lay out into the structure we've just created?
Yeah.
Hey guys, this is Holly. I have a hard stop at 2. Can you just email me when the next meeting is?
Sure.
Okay.
Thank you, Holly. Thank you.
Yeah.
And you guys, I have a bit of a hard stop at 2 as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Let's just talk about the possibility for a next meeting.
Leaving the meeting. Holly Lazaro.
Is that a possibility?
What was your suggestion?
I said 2 weeks from today. If Thursdays seem to be working for people, maybe we keep the same date. That would be the 13th.
Mary did request, Mary Chapin from the Clearinghouse requested if it could not be from 1 to 2, or if it could be moved from 2 to 3, because she would love to participate and had the standing meeting that can't be moved, so I said I would mention that.
Yeah, sure.
Perhaps we do a doodle poll on this to figure out a time, and we could certainly say 2 to 3 as a start, but send out a doodle poll to everybody, Michael, and come up with a time.
Sure.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. Let's shoot for approximately 2 weeks from now, during that week.
Okay. And did 2 to 3 not work for anybody?
In 2 weeks, I know that I'm going to be on a flight during that time.
Okay.
Yeah, 2 weeks it doesn't work. But going forward, it would probably be okay. This is Jeff.
Okay. Okay, I'll do the poll. No problem.
Perfect.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you, everybody. Great.
Thank you for participating.
Yep, thanks, everybody. See ya.
Thanks, everybody.
See you, Mark.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
Leaving the meeting.
Thanks, bye for now.
Jim Kelly.
Leaving the meeting.
Siva Suratanini, we're big.
Leaving the meeting. Leaving the meeting. Leaving the meeting.